Klal Yisrael was definitely dealt a 1-2 punch over the course of Erev Shabbos and Motzei Shabbos. You know, the Malachi Asharis came, and right before Shabbos took Rav David Feinstein, and as Shabbos Malkusa left, he took Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. And that is a 1-2 punch for the Jewish people. Now, just before I say what I want to say, I don't want anybody to think in any way I had anything to do with either of them in any personal form at all. I'm only an admirer from afar, and I can't say I have any personal stories or anything like that. But I do think it is important to notice that, you know, the combination of these two extraordinary men being taken from us in such short succession, in such a, you know, very quick way, I think we have to notice something about them. You know, time and time again, whenever I'm discussing a shiloh with Rav Schechter, and we're discussing a question about a shmua, an oral tradition from Rav Moshe Feinstein, or a tshuva from Rav Moshe, where, you know, the metzias of the question is not so clear, so Rav Schechter says, always, again and again, you have to ask Rav David. Only Rav David, Rav Schechter felt, was Naaman, was believed to totally understand and was trustworthy to say what his father said and what he was talking about. Rav Schechter would not hear oral traditions or kabbalas from other people, only Rav David. Because Rav David was such a kli kibul, such a receptor of what Rav Moshe was saying, and able to understand his father, and had no negias, had nothing else, you know, no personal investment at all, that he was only felt to be trustworthy in the eyes of Rav Schechter. You know, in the yeshivas in America, you'd hear time and time again, we can't move on until we hear from Rav David. Whether it was a medical emergency, whether it was a time-sensitive matter of the greatest order, we have to hear what Rav David says, again and again and again. And for that personality to be lost, we all in the yeshivas, is a devastating loss. But there was little press and little fanfare. I would doubt if anybody even has a sefer from Rav David Feinstein in their home, or you could even name a sefer that Rav David Feinstein wrote. We don't really have so much publicity press-wise from Rav David. I have a sefer called, beautiful sefer called V'Dibart Abam, which was put together with him and a Talmud of his, Rabbi Moskowitz, who has beautiful tshuvas related to ideas that Rav David said, but really not that much publicly from Rav David Feinstein. I heard over Shabbos from a Lower East Sider who davens in our shul, who said that Rav David would always insist on sitting in cramped carpools, going to smachos, and never, you know, needing anything fancy, sitting in the back with people, and never any airs about him, never looking for any kavod, never assuming there should be any kavod. He said that for many years, Rav David would go across from the yeshiva and MTJ and eat pizza in the local pizza store, and just pay for a slice and sit there in the parlor and eat pizza with everybody else. And at one point, somebody said, you know, that someone should tell him, it's not because Rosh Hashiva should sit and eat pizza in front of the whole world in this pizza store. So they ran to Rav David, and Rav David said, you know, it might not be becovered you, but it's becovered me. You know, there's no reason why not. What's the big deal? He didn't see anything wrong or odd about that, because that wasn't important. It was simply Torah and passing on the Masorah of his father. I'm saying we can go back. I know it was eons ago, but last January, by the Siyam HaShas, when Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky got up, and he had no reason to tell anybody this. It could have been a secret that went to the kever. Nobody would have known that really that Rav David Feinstein should have been the Siyam at the last Siyam HaShas. And Rav David felt that it should go to Rav Shmuel, whatever his cheshbonosh were. And when I had to speak about the Siyam HaShas afterwards, when I went back to SKA, you know, that week, and they asked me to reflect on what it was like there and the meaning of it, and to give a piece of, you know, feeling of what it was like to be there, I said, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, a high school girl or an elderly Rosh Yeshiva. Everyone has a sense of kavod. Everyone has a sense of wanting to be respected, wanting to feel admired and looked after, and people care about you. The Siyam HaShas doesn't come around that often. And not so many people in the history of Klal Yisrael, in the history of Torah, have been the Messiah at the Siyam HaShas. And the fact that Rav David passed that up and easily said that Rav Shmuel should take it and passed up literally a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. There are not so many things where we can literally say that it's only going to be asked of you once. And to pass that up because he felt on his cheshbonosh that it was the right thing to do. And pure anava, pure humility, says worlds about an adam gazal and what it means to be a very chasha person. By Moshe Shabbos we say Vayitem Lach, for those of us who say Vayitem Lach, but many people say it. And we end with the Gemara in Megillah. The Gemara in Megillah says, Amar of Yochanan kol makom she'atamotze gvuraso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where do you find the gvur of Hashem? Atamotze an venusoso. You'll find his humility. But that's not correct. We actually don't say what the Gemara says. We have a girsa of the Gemara that's in the Machzor Vitri. And when we, it's not in our Gemara Megillas, but when we say that piece of Gemara, we actually say, kol makom she'atamotze gdulaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where do you find godless? Where do you find what it means to be a gadol? You find it in somebody's humility. I don't know if there's a better paradigm of what it means to be a gadol as reflected in humility from what we saw from Rav David Feinstein in his lifetime. And the idea is so clear what it means to be a gadol and what it means to be a manhig, because he's totally mevatel himself to the klal, to the tzibur, and to the mesorah of his father. What seemingly would be like another world, let's talk about transmitting the mesorah in a different way from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. You know, the writings of Rabbi Sacks are immensely popular. They are immensely important. And it's not so often you can say the same those two things about the same thing, that it's very popular and very important. There's a lot of things that are very important that nobody cares about. There's a lot of things that are very popular that shouldn't be as popular as they are. But the writings and the speaking of Rabbi Sacks are popular and important because they should be. You know, whether it's the covenant, the conversation books that many of us have in our libraries, the weekly emails that are written with depth and relevance to the times, Rabbi Sacks was a master of taking ancient and timeless ideas and presenting them and packaging them that it could resonate with a contemporary reader and a contemporary listener. He was a master mechanech. Now, I can't say that I'm an expert in all Rabbi Sacks' writings, and I've read everything from cover to cover, and I know, you know, about his worldview. I'm only going to speak from two pieces that resonate with me very strongly and had a very big impact on me. The first, I'm going to talk one from reading, if you're more of a reader than a watcher. And then if you don't like to read so much, I'll give you something to listen to and to watch if need be. If you have about an hour, I would recommend highly to listen to Rabbi Sacks' speech that he gave at the Kinnas Shluchim for Chabad a number of years ago, and he was the main speaker. And he spoke about how he became involved in working for the Klal at the direction of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It is a masterclass on inspiration. It's a masterclass on storytelling and public speaking. He reads the entire speech from notes, word for word. But he's such a good speaker that it didn't matter. He read it like you're reading a book. He read every single word for word, but it was so good, it didn't matter. A friend of mine once told me that they asked him how he became such a good speaker, and he said, because I read great speeches. That's what he said. I read other great speeches, and that's what helped me, you know, in my speaking and becoming able to present. And it is an amazing story and show of what it means to be inspired, to take meaning, and to work for the tzibur, and to be osek b'tarchei tzibur. That's the first thing I would recommend. The second thing, again, it's not long, but it's an essay, is Rabbi Sacks' introduction to his magnum opus, which I think is his translation of the Siddur, the Koran Siddur. His introduction to the Siddur is a work that personally changed my davening many years ago. It put my davening on a different level, and it was never the same. It's based on a question as to why there's no Maseches Emuna for Klal Yisrael. We have Maseches Shabbos and Pesachim, and we have Taros and Kelim. Masechtos amongst Chazal to discuss everything, all categorized, organized in Siddur and Bar Yehuda Nasi. We even have a Seder to teach us Musar. We have Pirkei Avos. But how come Chazal didn't make one book that shows us what we're supposed to think and what we're supposed to believe in as a Jew? It's scattered. You have to go through different Agadot. It says a little bit in Sanhedrin, Megillah, some stuff in Brachos. It's all over the place. How come they couldn't put it in one book and say, know this, this is what you have to learn, and this will teach you to be a good believing Jew? So Rabbi Sacks goes through this and a lot of different questions, and he comes to the conclusion that really the Siddur is Maseches Emuna. The davening is the work of Chazal and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah that shows us what we're supposed to believe. And he says a Jew davens their Emuna. And he shows it beautifully throughout the Siddur. He says this is why the second brach of Shemoneh Esrei is again and again, Mechai Mesim Barachim Aram, Mechai Mesim. Why five times Tchias HaMesim? Because Tchias HaMesim is part of their Emuna. And therefore Chazal implanted it in Shemoneh Esrei. Shemoneh Esrei is a building block of what a Jew is supposed to believe and how a Jew is supposed to think. That essay on its own gives you amazing, amazing insight into how to take an idea of our Masorah tradition and to package it in an incredibly relevant way at the end of the day. You know, these amazing works combined with analysis of science in Torah, philosophy in Torah, contemporary events in Torah, anti-Semitism in Torah, created a living library that can guide any Jew for any future generations who grapple with the contemporary worlds in Torah. It's an amazing, amazing legacy he leaves behind. You know, for many Jews, even Orthodox Jews, the Torah was not a priority in their life. But Rabbi Sacks brought Torah to different kinds of Jews who never would have picked up a sefer, but they would never miss a new book from Rabbi Sacks. They never may be interested in a shir, but they would pack that shul if Rabbi Sacks showed up, right? If Rabbi Sacks is coming to town, the shul will never be filled for any shir, but Rabbi Sacks comes to teach Torah publicly, they'll pack that shul. They may never listen to the rabbi's drasha, but they would never miss a Shabbos davening without reading that weekly email on the parsha. Who cares what the rabbi has to say? But Rabbi Sacks has to say it, I want to pay attention. And he opened up worlds to people who never would have learned a piece of Torah, taking Torah seriously. And that itself makes him a master mechanech. So what do these two people have to do with each other, who passed away within the course of 24 hours, leaving thousands and thousands of Jews bereft of their teacher? So Rabbi Soloveitchik has a famous speech that he gave to the RCA convention, where he talks about Mesorah and the teaching of Torah and tradition, and he talks about how the learning of Torah is really a repetition of the events of Har Sinai, having this revelation from the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that just like at Har Sinai, there was awe and there was power of Hashem, so too, when we sit down to open a Gemara and to learn, we have to understand that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is there, and Hashem is revealing Himself at every single moment with a new Kabbalah HaTorah. That's why the Birchas HaTorah are all in present tense form. No Sein HaTorah. Everything is happening at this moment. All the time, Hashem is revealing Himself through the Torah. And it's this ecstatic, metaphysical performance, Rabbi Soloveitchik said. But we have to approach learning Torah the way they did at Har Sinai, with humility, with awe, with trepidation, shaking over the seriousness of what's going on. And that means being mekabel ol malchus shemayim, that we subjugate ourselves, we lower ourselves, we have humility in the front, in the face of the Torah, and even though we may have certain perspectives or ideas, but we are mevatel ourselves to the Torah, and we are mekabel ol malchus shemayim. And that's what it means to learn Torah in the proper way. That we have the Mesorah, but we are humble before the Mesorah, and we transmit that Mesorah with that sense of humility. You can only be a kli to serve the klal and to receive a Mesorah like none other from Rav Moshe Feinstein if you are mevatel yourself to the Mesorah and your view of passing on that Mesorah as the single most important thing in the world. And to Rav David Feinstein, that meant removing yourself from anything that's not about Torah Mesorah and being mevatel himself to his father's Mesorah, and that allowed him to be a vessel to teach and to answer shilas from thousands and thousands of Jews on the most remarkable and difficult questions in halacha, because there's that sense of godless and anivus at the same time. And Rabbi Sacks was certainly original in his thought and his presentation, but it was bound to Mesorah, it was bound to tradition, and showing the Jewish world, along with the non-Jewish world, because he was certainly popular there as well, shows on the BBC and all different types of media, how beautiful and relevant our Torah and our traditions are, and he was able to raise himself up, and to those who learned from him, whether in person, video, books, emails, because he viewed himself as a transmitter and a servant to the Torah. Not above the Torah, but a servant to the Torah to transmit that Torah and that Mesorah at the end of the day. So these last 24 hours have certainly been difficult for Klal Yisrael. We no longer have two very different Torah leaders who seemingly lived in two very, very different worlds, but really lived at the same address. And that address was teaching Torah and carrying on the tradition with humility and Avas Yisrael and Avas HaTorah. Okay, we'll begin now.